This week's episode of Still Entitled is brought to you by the Tested Premium Member Community. It's thanks to you guys out there that lets us continue doing what we love doing and making videos like this old effects shop. This week, Frank and I apply zombie makeup to our friend Gordon Tarpley, and also we launch our new show, Science in Progress, with Kishore Hari and Indre Viscontis. They take a look at 3D printed organs. You can learn more and check out other premium videos at tested.com/premium. Now on with the show.
Welcome to Still Entitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Welcome back, gentlemen.
Thank you.
It's been our long national nightmare is over.
No, it's still going on.
Oh, okay. Well, true.
I think.
Very true.
Yeah.
Call your senators today. That's
yes.
All we're going to say about that. But
do
you
it.
Should call your senators because it will help.
Norm, you only just noticed the T-Rex above the pool table.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing?
It's beautiful.
It's totally so much better there.
Yes.
It was good. Like when we first started coming in here, you just got in. It was hanging right where you saw it when you hit the door.
Yeah, it was like the mezuzah of my shop.
Yeah, and like people would come in and like my first impression of this shop was literally, oh, this is what it's like to be not the apex predator on the planet.
This is what I say that this does is it helps you remember what it was like to be at the, you know, lower on the food chain.
Yeah, pretty far down, let's be real, in that world. Back,
so,
you know.
Previously, you had an interesting fixture above the pool table.
Yes.
This arrangement of light bulbs. Is there still a light inside the T-Rex now?
Yeah,
so
you see the light being cast from it. I bought... there are some really nice, inexpensive, flat LED ceiling lights that look like recessed fixtures, are only an inch thick, cost about $30, and it sits there. And the best part about it is when you walk to the back of the T-Rex, you really can't see the light fixture. So it doesn't inhibit the skull's wonderful profile in any way from any angle.
Well, she's a lovely beast.
Sue is absolutely gorgeous. And I like having her more central, and yet still it takes people a while to notice that there's a giant 5-foot-long Tyrannosaurus Rex head above the pool table that is also the best pool lamp ever.
I think she's a little smaller. She looks a little smaller there.
Yeah,
when she was hanging over there, it was a little more of a imposing thing.
Oh, when she was hanging right down.
Yeah.
So that was when I had first brought her in. She was just hanging from my little chain hoist there.
That was the moment that I was like, oh, well, Adam's not messing around.
If I had the space, I would hang her that all the time.
The chain hoist also makes you think it's much heavier than it actually is.
Yeah.
Because it's foam, right? It's relatively
light.
Yeah,
she only weighs about 70 pounds. I managed to move that by myself.
Oh.
You do that a lot. Okay, so we're bearing the lead here.
Yes.
Norm, you just got back from your 2-week honeymoon, followed by a week or so in the UK for the both of you.
We talked a little bit about the honeymoon in the podcast while we were on the trip.
Nobody listens to podcasts. I haven't heard that yet.
But we just got back from 10 days in
England.
In England.
Mm-hmm. Driving.
Oh, you did a driving tour?
No, we didn't drive all around, but we did rent a car. We did drive.
We drove
a
on the wrong side of the road.
So I want to talk about Joey. Joey did the first of the driving.
Okay.
And we were down in Cornwall, in the southwestern corner of England. Beautiful area. Stayed in St. Ives, a magnificent little seaside town.
There was a man from St. Ives.
It's also Bath lotion. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And we were near Penzance.
The pirates are there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we were driving each morning from St. Ives to the location we were shooting at in Cornwall, which is still to be a secret. But some of these roads, right, are cow paths that are like 1,000 years old.
Well, then you're
driving this car that is...
So yeah, it's a relatively modern car,
which has
the detectors
that you can't turn
and
off.
The car's going absolutely nuts.
Yeah,
and Joey is like, you know what this feels like? Joey says, this feels like it feels just as scary as when 15-year-old me was first driving.
That's how scary
it is.
Well, you're on the wrong side of the road on top of everything else.
That's right.
But at least the wheel's on the wrong side too.
Yeah, so the mapping of driving on the other side of the car, obviously I have the Land Cruiser that's on the right-hand side, but I've driven extensively in Australia and England and Scotland, and that maps pretty quickly. That's not the most difficult part. The hard part to me is that the roads in England are super narrow.
And old in some parts of the country.
So the problem I always have is the really deeply ingrained reflexes, like we look left and then right and then left.
Making a right turn when you're driving on the other side of the road, which is their equivalent of a left
turn,
is
yeah.
when there's no stopping traffic, is one of the scariest things possible. Right.
All of your instincts are bad.
Everything you thought is wrong.
Well, and so driving with the left side, with the wrong wheel on the wrong side of the road, I've driven, the place that I drove the most on the wrong side of the road was the, we had American cars, yeah. but we were in an English colony in the Caribbean, so we all had...
Oh, right.
Drivers, normal drivers.
You're driving
on the left
like
side.
I do in my cruiser.
Yeah, and that was just.
I didn't have a problem with that. I find also, though, that being a passenger,
when
you're on the wrong side, feels like you're about to hit all the cars.
Oh, yeah. yeah. Which is, goes back to when you're 15 year old, you think you want to drive in the middle of the lane. But
yeah.
No, you're off to the right or the left.
Oh.
We also had a manual transmission car. So, Joey, okay. the whole story is that he flew to. First to New York, then to Manchester, then down to Newquay where he rented a car. Then he had an hour-long drive to destination. So it was like, 24 hours of full travel.
Good journey.
Very yep. tired. The car rental place didn't have any automatic cars left. So he had to drive manual in an SUV on the other side of the road after 30 hours of traveling.
Oh,
then
no.
go down narrow lanes where the car beeping went to a point where it just sounded like it was flatlining.
Except we just called it flatlining. And by the way, this car had the most modern thing I have seen in a car, which is cameras in the mirrors and the front and rear camera that give you an overhead of yeah. where you're driving and the stuff around you. That's amazing. And yeah. I can't wait till all things have that.
Jeremy's Bolt has that. It's rad.
Yeah. Phenomenal. But in this little pathway we were driving to our location, it was, and meanwhile the FedEx truck is like barreling ahead of you at like 40 miles an hour on the same lane. You are inching along because your car is screaming at you the whole time. You know.
It was fun over the course of the week of making this commute every morning there and back to get more confident and to a point where Joey was timing himself down the narrow stretches.
Oh my God.
We do have a video which we'll eventually unveil that we shot where Adam's pulled out his phone and recorded the trench run that we did down this alleyway.
That's right. I'll have to
box that to you. It's nice that you guys have fun.
It was a good trip. And then Norm drove for the last few days.
Yes.
And that was a series of, we're up in Bristol. We visited Aardman Animation.
Yes, yes.
And
they
we had
Waltz and Gromit and Chicken Run.
The
and,
most wonderful day with those guys. They're amazing. It's an amazing group of craftspeople. The one of the things that is repeatedly clear everyone you talk to is that everyone pays obeisance to story first and foremost, and the amount of layering in of detail and love and every character and prop and set and process that we were able to witness and shoot was just lovely. And Bristol is land of the roundabouts.
Yeah.
It was like,
oh my goodness.
It was just like,
that's always
they
fun.
Come so fast and furious. And it's great because if you don't know where you're going, you just keep on going around it. But it really
hey
was
kids,
like,
big
you
man,
know,
Parliament.
constantly enter this one, exit it at the fourth exit, enter it at 6 o'clock, exit at 3 o'clock. We tried every method. And even still, we were like going off the wrong way a whole bunch of times.
It happens. Roundabouts going the wrong way of the road are especially exciting.
And I know we're just talking about it now, but we did shoot videos at every place we went to. So from our trip to Aardman to other places, you guys will see these videos. And
we got to see our friends Andrew Dow and Grant at FBFX.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
The guys who built amazing things like Thor's costumes for the Avengers films. They built all the armor for Centurion. That Roman Segmentia armor that mm-hmm. I own is theirs.
And of course, the Martian.
They built the Martian suits.
Ooh.
So we shot some stuff with them. That was pretty cool, and they revealed to us some new processes. Like many special effects shops, like when we went to cover Weta, FBFX is inventing some of their own technologies to make stuff work in order to streamline their processes with the studios. And, you know, it's really cool to see how people are repurposing the coolest cutting-edge technology to make things that look really old and beat up and awesome.
Have you guys, I don't mean to take a tangent here, but have you guys talked about the Thor Ragnarok trailer yet?
We have not.
No, we haven't.
Because it has the most heavy metal, like heavy metal movie, not heavy metal. I mean, both, actually.
No, the villainess with the antlers is the coolest thing I have seen in a long time. I'm kind of obsessed with
her. It's Cate Blanchett.
That's Cate Blanchett?
That's what everybody says. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. She plays Hela.
From Galadriel to
Hela?
Hela is the name of the character.
Holy
yeah.
cow, she's terrifying.
Well, and like the title treatment with like the swooping in 80s. Yeah, it's yeah. so good. So good.
Also, to describe Thor to describe Hulk as a friend from work.
Yeah.
Like, I just think for that line to truly work, this movie's got to be great.
And it's built on the two movies Thor has done and yep. the movies he's been in the Avengers. That fish shot, he's really embraced him being this outsider in our crazy superhero world.
Yeah.
I love the Hemsworths. Chris is amazing.
Yeah. Liam seems okay.
Liam seems just fine.
And then there's the guy on Westworld.
What?
Oh, right. The yes, security the guard. Third one.
That's yeah. another Hemsworth. Yes. Just keep, it's like a Baldwin Arquette apocalypse over there.
I picture that his parents both have like giant chests, right? Right. Broad shoulders. And
they actually stole some DNA from, what's his name? You know, Master and Commander and
Russell
Crowe. Good God, I can't believe I couldn't pull Russell Crowe there. But yeah, they just cloned Russell Crowe four or five times.
The Ragnarok trailer is very, I've watched it several times.
Oh, and the rainbow, I don't even know what you call that rainbow swoop in on the Ragnarok at the end, but it's
logo.
Like the logo 80s, swoop. The, yeah. It's like
it's very
screams.
Atari.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Anyway, sorry. Continue.
The director of that did What We Do in the Shadows, the vampire film.
Oh.
And also did the New Zealand film. He's New Zealand. He did Hunt for the Wilder People.
Hunt for the Wilder People is amazing. Have I talked about it on the podcast?
No, we haven't talked about it.
Oh my god. Think,
yeah.
Okay. Okay.
And just we first heard about Hunt for the Wilder People when we were on the set of Alien Covenant, because yes. that was also filmed in New Zealand, and all the publicity people there were just raving about it. So
and
please describe it.
Yeah. I came across it on a plane trip recently. I can't even remember where I was going. And it's a New Zealand film starring Sam Neill and a bunch of New Zealand actors. And it's phenomenal. It's very loving. You will spend the first 3 minutes of the film going, is this my kind of film? And then 15 minutes in, you'll be like, I'm still not sure this is my kind of film. And then it will win you over with a love and a heart. I know I am given to hyperbole, but this film is so incredible. Sam Neill plays a very washed up, grizzled bastard who's amazing, and the lead kid, this little kid, is like a troubled youth. This film, it feels a little like Strictly Ballroom in how strange it can get. It actually gets quite surreal at times, and yet is a beautiful. It's a chase film. It's a young kid and this older guy played by Sam Neill who are on the run. And they're on the run in New Zealand. And I won't tell you any more than that.
Yeah, no.
It is just so beautiful and has such a great heart.
It's funny.
Track that down.
It's so
You've
funny.
Seen it.
Yes. Oh,
yes.
Seen
no,
it.
It's
yeah.
also, yeah, deeply hilarious. And you like find yeah. yourself laughing. And I mean, I can't gush enough about this movie.
There's a great moment with a keyboard piano, a song that's sung.
Okay. Is this like a Reservoir Dogs great moment?
No. This is
Star really
Turn.
Funny.
It's not
yeah.
that kind
okay.
of movie.
It's very heartwarming.
Okay.
There's a lot of haiku poems, and there's a lot of like bad haiku in it.
I like bad haiku. I'm a fan.
So go see Hunt for the Wilder People. I'm so glad that's Thor Ragnarok. I did not realize
that. Oh, my God. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Okay, so you barreled down the back roads and were a menace to traffic in England.
What else have we been...
But we had some decent food in England.
We had some great food. Did we talk about that food?
No, not at all.
Joey and Norman Danica stayed in a
Airbnb
yeah. in St. Ives and did the early work of braving the seaside restaurants. The coolest dish was this large anchovy wrapped around a sage leaf and tempura fried.
They wrapped the anchovy around the sage leaf?
They basically, it was the size of a sage leaf, so they split it in half. Sandwiched it over sage leaf and then tempura fried it. And I have to tell you, that thing was off the hook.
Was it battered on
that
side?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, here, I'll send you a picture. I'll show you a picture. Hold on. This is, it was fantastic.
I think we tried to dispel the myth that England has bad food.
Okay.
And we found all the great food
Look at
places
that.
in in town. Yeah. Although we did eat at pubs, and you know,
there's Norm holding out the little frying pan it came in.
How big is it? Like anchovies here are usually like
three inches. Very appetizer. Large.
Okay.
Appetizer. Yeah. Very large.
But not like sardine sized.
No.
I mean, that was a huge sardine. A sardine's like a foot maybe.
We found some random good Indian food on our very last day.
We did. Yeah, they didn't want to open, and then we went in. It was fantastic. Well, Indian food in England is absolutely going to be amazing. Everywhere I've had it, it's great. It's like you can't get bad at fish and chips, right? It's the same kind of thing.
Cool. Yeah. Sounds like a good trip.
It was.
Yeah, and you know, I know there was a lot of stuff going on in England, even like as we were there.
The Grenfell Tower burned down while we were there. It was very upsetting.
There were the attacks. You know, they had a terrorist attack. They had
the London attack.
The guy that drove hit people on the bridge.
And then they had their election. So like things were going on, but you know, it's a lot of that stuff is really blown out of proportion in the media as well, because the people we were hanging out with in bars and you know, they were going about their regular day. And yeah, everyone was aware of the stuff going on, but they weren't cowering in fear or anything.
The thing my grandmother, who was English and grew up in London during the Blitz, used to say was that the English people as a whole, you know, the bomb alarm went off when she was on the bus on the way home at 4 o'clock in the afternoon one day when it was still light out, which never happened.
Wow.
And some old lady on the back of the bus said, "Oh, Jerry's at it again, a little early today," and looked at her watch, and everybody laughed and they went on with their bus ride home. So, you know, indomitable is the word that she used.
We actually spent some time in a classic British pub that really was like so quintessential. Mm-hmm. It could have been a set from American Werewolf in London.
Okay.
It, up to and including the locals all stopping talking and turning to stare at you when you walk in.
That's probably just you, Adam.
What else? Did you partake of any of the of weird films on the flight home?
No, I flew United and their system was not good.
No!
at least the older airplanes.
Oh,
Yes.
I knew I took in some new television. I watched the entire 2016 season of The Great British Baking Show.
Oh, that show's great.
Wait, you mean so The Great British Bake Off? Well, in the UK, it's called Baking Show.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. In the UK, it's called Bake Off. Here, it's called Baking Show because Sarah Lee owns Betty Crocker owns Bake Off.
The word Bake Off? The world is a terrible place.
And it's so terrible that the trophy plate they award the star baker at the end of the show, they had to Photoshop the words out of a clear plate.
They digitally removed it from the seasons that are on Netflix. It's
ridiculous.
Amazing.
Crazy. Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
Let's forget about that stuff.
But the show.
Have we not talked about this on the podcast?
I don't think so.
This is one of the greatest shows I have ever witnessed.
Oh, yeah.
And I enjoyed. So, yeah, again, a loving show. It's like MasterChef Junior in that it's not about eliminating your opponents. It's about everyone's just trying to make some good stuff and they feel invested and they want to make good stuff and they want to learn from each other. And like, frankly, I found myself in the middle of like the third episode, I just randomly burst into tears.
Which season? Second season?
The most recent season, 2016.
Okay, so they delayed it a couple times for U.S. broadcast. So I don't know who was in that season. I've only seen two of them.
So I watched the first two that are on Netflix, and then I went back and watched one of the older ones using the proxy that no longer works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Use the BBC player. And the thing there, I watch a lot of reality TV. There's a bunch of stuff that I love about that. The big one is that the hosts...
The two comedians.
They're so funny.
They're moderately funny, but they're also really decent human beings.
Yes. Yeah.
And for example, if somebody's having a meltdown because their cake collapses, they've been known to go over and just drop the most horrific expletives around so the producers won't be able to use the footage from that meltdown.
Wow.
Right? When Mary Berry and Frank Hollywood, right? Paul Hollywood are judging, they come at it from a place of decency instead of a way to abuse human beings.
I mean, and they make funny jokes. Like at one point in the 2016 season, the host turns to Mary Berry and she says, "Right, now off with you to your intimacy class."
well, and then the other thing that they do that doesn't come through in the show necessarily is that they do the setup and they tell them what it's going to be. Then they send them at the end of this. So the show records like weekends.
Yeah. Show recording on weekends is amazing because it allows real people who have jobs and lives to come and participate in this thing.
Exactly.
They don't have to take 16 days in a row.
And it's not crammed in.
No, like, they're not trying to
hotbox them the entire time. So they break down.
So this is totally clear. It's such a different flavor.
And then they have a week or five days to go home and practice the thing.
Right. The very first build is something, the very first cook is something they know about. So they've had time to practice it and they show up ready to play. And even still, there are fascinating disasters.
Well, I think they know what the next week is when they leave on Sunday. So they have that week to practice as well, which is like makes it a competition for normal people instead of like, I love Top Chef, right? I love, despite its flaws.
Yeah.
Top Chef is a fascinating program. It's always, and Project Runway, all of those where you're seeing the people in the world who are really, really good at this thing that they do.
Yeah.
It's always fascinating.
But this was
that's good.
This is just a level of deep affection for the craft and even
each other.
And each other that was super important to me. And watching how unhinged everyone gets when being judged and their cake is raw or their dough has fallen. And
good bake.
I just watched. Yeah. I guess the previous season in which in the very first bake-off, this woman's mousse does not set. And as she tries to pull the collar off the cake, it just collapses. And like the host is crying.
Oh, yeah.
When she's like, it's just a cake. It's just a cake. She's like, it's not just a cake. She's like, I know, but it is just a cake.
Oh, God. There's a moment in one of the early Netflix seasons, I think, where one of the contestants does his cake and it's just not, it falls basically and it slides off the side and he just picks it up and dumps it in the trash.
Oh, and he doesn't make it.
And obviously he's not going to make it, but like, they're like, look, you could have presented us the fallen cake. We would have tasted it. If it tasted good, you might have still progressed, right?
There was a gingerbread house. There's a gingerbread house in the 2016 episode in which one of the houses just complete, it's an earthquake victim house, and she still presents it.
Yeah. Mm.
And she is withered, and they are like, the judges, Mary Berry and Paul Hollywood, go to lengths to be like, it clearly fell. It's delicious.
Well, I mean,
it's
that's
delicious.
The thing.
You got your flavors right.
It's really a shame. Yeah, they're like,
you nailed your flavors.
They're looking right.
Go ahead. Sorry. No, I was just saying the difference between that and your master, not Master Chef Junior, but like your Master Chef or even your Top Chef, is that at that point, one of the judges, the producers would have gone on long enough until one of the judges says, well, this is a complete failure in every regard. You've really let us all down.
Right.
And they just don't do that on
this
show.
They don't do that.
And it's much more humane.
It's much more humane. And Paul Hollywood is the physical embodiment of a human who's just turned into a human from being a husky.
Who's baked his entire life.
He's got the blue eyes, the white hair, that kind of intense persona.
A lot of product.
I love that show. I'm now burning my way through previous season.
It's just joyous.
It's so joyous.
In the U.S., we have our Netflix version. PBS, I think, distributes as well. But it's still a cut-down version, apparently, of the UK version. In the UK version, like when we watch the show, one of the things we want is more of the lessons from cooking, how the things that take away. And apparently in the UK version, they actually are segments that we don't see where they dive into the science of the bakes.
Can I subscribe to the BBC online or something like that?
I used to use a proxy to watch from the UK proxy.
Let me see
that
what I can
doesn't
do.
Work so much anymore. At least mine doesn't work anymore. The other thing they show is the history. So like if it's some sort of British food that has incredible cultural impact, they let us know that in the segments. Anyway.
And I found it amazing how making caramel kicks everyone's ass.
Oh, it's you have to watch it constantly.
It's just like people doing their second, third, fourth attempt at getting caramel right is like all the different things that people go through with stuff not working, recipes that don't have the amount of time you should bake for, and textural problems that people have, the problem solving, the engineering. There's an engineer in the 2016 season of Charming Young Ginger who's uses his engineering skills in the builds. It's
that's
wonderful.
Great.
Yeah.
No one knows how long to prove.
I have a food endorsement but I know you need to go. Chef Steps a few weeks ago did a here's how to make ice cream custard in your sous vide bath, which was as soon as I read the headline, I was like, right, that's an idiot proof, easy way to make ice cream custard.
Holy
that
cow.
Doesn't involve stirring for hours.
Yeah.
You just you put all your ingredients together in a bowl, you immersion blend them, you chuck them in a bag in the bath at 150 degrees, 147 degrees for an hour, and just kind of stir up the bag every once in a while.
I am going to break out their sous vide machine and try that.
It is. Flawless.
Oh my God, I'm totally doing that.
I gotta say, if you're gonna start watching The Great British Bake Off or Baking Show, do your future self a favor and find yourself a pastry or a sponge that you put in your fridge before you start watching an episode. Because at the end of the episode, you'll want it, and if you open, you have a dessert. The time portal open, you'll high five yourself in the past.
Because it will make you so hungry.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I guess that'll do it for us this week. Norm, what's on Tested? Anything exciting?
Yes. We have a tutorial that Frank and I did about how to put on zombie prosthetic makeup. Last week, we didn't mention on the podcast, we didn't have one last week, but it was the National Week of Making.
Yes.
And so we have a series of videos everyone should watch from our team and our friends just about what inspires them to make.
And we had a wonderful, wonderful video. I'm going to do a specific call out to coders. As when I was at Maker Faire in San Mateo, I kept asking every kid who came up for autographs, what are you working on? And several people who code said, I don't make stuff, I code. And I felt really strongly our week of making should include coding, because coding is making.
Software counts.
And Kai from Black Girls Code gave a wonderful story about her origin story of how she became a coder. And we have Kishore, we have Michael Giacchino, we have wonderful, wonderful people. Yeah.
Cool.
So okay. Please check that out.
Well, thanks for watching, guys. We'll see you all
next
week.
Thank you, everybody.
All right.
Bye. Bye.